You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Dr. Michelle, but we are walking hand in hand on this road of life, you and I together, and I'm so privileged and so happy and so just, I look so forward to it, and there is my phone, so I'm turning that one down. So I just love doing this with you all in the morning, and I'm just, thank you. It's about thankfulness. It's about gratitude and thankfulness. No matter what your life holds for you, gratitude and thankfulness abounds. And I'm telling you, I can say that right now. And literally 2 hours ago, all I could think of when I woke up was how much I've lost during these last few years. So it's that kind of thing that when your life blows apart, watch out, get out of the way. It's like a volcano or a landmine. When your life blows apart, whether it's from a death or a huge change or a divorce or just all kinds of stuff, or perhaps as someone that I talked to recently, their child decided that they were often some very extremist ideology and then went with an entire group of these extremists to some other continent. So it's very heartbreaking, and it's a big challenge to say, I don't have control over that. If they're an adult, I don't have control over that. And so we're going to talk today, though. Today's such a joyous day because not only are we in just walking toward Christmas, which is in all its joys, all its meaning, and all its painful reminders as a Christmas, or bittersweet reminders or lovely reminders, whatever category you fit into, today is the most fabulous day because it is the feast day of one of the most awesome, I don't know how to describe to you how significant, I'm going to describe to you how completely and utterly important Our Lady Guadalupe is to me. It never stops. It never stops. And I'm going to give you an example about how things that you can never anticipate. I'm going to give you several that you can never anticipate. Just pop into your life. You're going down a road and then someone says, hey, turn over here. And you go, oh, well, fine, I will. And boom. There is a guy who is a homeless gentleman, and he does come to the soup kitchen that I volunteer at. And he's always wearing, he's not a Catholic, but he's always wearing some rosary, some Marian medal, some scapular, some something. And one day he comes in and he's got this beautiful rosary around his neck. And I said, a rosary, you've got this rosary. He goes, yeah, she just doesn't let me go. She followed me down the beach. So I had to pick her up. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I tried to run away and I couldn't. He said, I was standing by the water and in the waves bring in this rosary. And he kept saying she. And I said, well, it sounds like Mary's after you. He goes, oh, no, she ran after the beach behind me. I said, well, how did that happen? He said, because I walked further on the beach. And the next thing I know, the same rosary washes in again. And that happened one time and then another time. And he said, she followed me all the way down the beach. And finally, I just picked her up and put her around my neck. Now, a lot of the people that live on the streets here, it's a very common common thing that what they have today, they may not have in 5 minutes. What happens oftentimes, and I myself have perhaps given different individuals different things of mine that I thought maybe they would like or needed, and they're gone in 10 minutes. And what happens is, if they fall asleep, then they're fair game. If they don't, if they're not just like tied to everything they have, people, other people come by and maraud the people that are sleeping. Oftentimes people either are doing drugs or they are alcoholics and they pass out. And when they pass out, or one of them was actually in a seizure at one point, other people, sadly as it is, it's a prey and predator situation. They see a blanket, they see a guitar, they see something they can either trade or sell for drugs or use themselves. They'll just take it. It's a fact of life out on the street. It really is. It's not an easy deal. And there are a lot of mentally ill out on the street. I want to talk to you today about Our Lady of Guadalupe and in all her dynamism. If that is, I love making up words, you know that. So in all her dynamic amazingness, her beauty. So real life stories, real life miracles, real life, just like Our Lady was chasing my friend who is about 6'5", homeless, and just, like I said, not Catholic at all, but always has some Mary around his neck, chasing him down the street. Mary chases you. I mean, it was such a comical thought of this beautiful Mary, you know, just coming, just running after him, or just like floating after him and like tackling him on the beach. But he basically said that's what she did. But she does that. She really does. In her sweet, beautiful yesness of the world, I am a servant of the Lord. That was her statement. That was her frame of reference. That's who she saw herself as at a little tiny teenager. Somebody the other day said 16, but I've heard more that most likely she was around already betrothed, maybe even 12, 13, 14, somewhere in there. So I don't know historically, but it doesn't matter. She was scared. She had lots to be concerned about. She was like, well, what are you even talking about? At the same time, she said, well, you know, I'm sure in some ways in her mind, it's like, okay, well, I've asked my questions, but as any little child would do, young preteen or teen, probably teen, just coming into adolescence. It's like, well, okay, how can it be? Well, this is what you said. They don't think it's odd at all. They're talking to an angel. And she was troubled. It says right there in scripture, she was troubled. However, she said, do unto me according to thy word. I am a servant. I'm a handmaid of the Lord. Or however the different translations come up. So Mary then, in her ethereal world, in her non-corporeal world, appears over and over and over again. A woman for all seasons. Remember that's the title of that one, A Man for All Seasons, which is an awesome movie, by the way. But she's a woman for all seasons. She's a woman for all time. She's a woman for all. She does it all. You know, there's an old commercial back in, oh gosh, way back. Sometimes you'll see it when they're doing a highlight on different commercials and good commercials. And it was about, unfortunately, the first a woman, she can do it all type of thing, as if that was going to liberate women. But she can bring home the bacon, fry it up in the pan, and never let you forget you're a man. That kind of sucks, actually. I don't want to even think about that, because that thinking got all of us into a lot of trouble, because that's impossible. But she is like that. She is the one who will make it her business to go where you need to be. Are you in Korea? Are you in Africa? Are you in Mexico? Are you in the United States? Are you in France? Where are you? Wherever you are, she's going to be there. So today, the feast day of Our Lady Guadalupe, so significant to me. So I'm going to tell you why she's so significant to me. One of the ways she got to be significant to me. So I, in 2000 and, around 2003, I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And that's where I had my reconversion. Never expected a reconversion, ever, never. And I was down in Fort Lauderdale. So I'm driving down by the beach and all the people, some guy in a Speedo and on his roller skates with a parrot on his shoulder, you know, with his wraparound sunglasses. He's going down there and some little kids are riding their bikes and other tourists are obviously from New York or wherever, all looking all intense with their Hawaiian shirts, and people from all over the world are there and they're at the beach, and there's scammers and scam artists and thieves and families. And it's just as colorful as it is colorful in all ways that you can think of it. So I'm down there in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, thinking, oh, this is amazing. I'm looking out. It looks like a Raphael painting or a Rembrandt painting or some Renaissance painting of the sky of heaven when the sunrise was coming up and the pink clouds and the turquoise water and palm trees. And it was heaven. But that was the first place that my life began to fall apart and at the same time begin to come together. Explain that on the other side of the break. We're also going to talk about the bishops and Pope Francis and Our Lady of Guadalupe and migrants and immigrants and your personal stories as well. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
If you like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support today. Thank you. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live 573 for Bread 4. 573-4 Bread 4. Okay, so I'm telling you this story about Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And let me tell you, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, I thought that was going to be our time. The kids were gone. Then husband, my life really did fall apart, had an opportunity. I had an opportunity. I had a great opportunity. Oh my gosh, I had the best opportunity. We were going to be right down by the water, A1A. You just can't believe it. I'd grown up in California and I'd never really been to Florida, but I really, when I went there, I thought, my gosh, this is like a little slice of heaven. It's paradise. It's everything. It was so beautiful. It was intense and I could pick up on the intensity, and it really was. But it was beautiful, and it was just in that little pocket where it got breezes all the time. So it wasn't as hot as Miami, or maybe it was, but it would get these beautiful breezes. And so I'm starting out with my reconversion story, my shock and awe. But today you're going to have a lot about migrants and immigrants, because let me just fast forward, a little spoiler alert. You're an immigrant. You're a migrant. You've been here. You might be a refugee. You could not, unless you are Native American and listening to this program, you came from somewhere else. Now, you could have been from a long line of marauders who came in and stomped everybody who was here on the ground. Or you could be like my family, which most people I know came from very starving poor places. And they were, they dreamt of a better life. They didn't have an internet to check the ratings. They didn't have Yelp, you know, to go, hey guys, you know, it's really, really tough over in that new world. They just went in droves. And my people came from all over the place. Poor, poor, poor. And one poor person meets another poor person in one in Canada, one, I mean, they're all over the place. But the reality is that my father, at one point, 10 people to one room, and were just the worst people in the totem pole because they were Italians. They had very derogatory terms, which was basically, you all know what they are, probably, maybe you don't, but basically the reason they had it, because whoever thought it was the thing to do to degrade them, it was taking one little mound of defecation and another little mound of defecation, slapping them together, and the sound you made was what my people were, Italians. So they also, as I did a program so long ago, I want to get back to Mary, but so long ago, I did a program on talented and gifted programs, and I read a direct quote from one of their, they still study this person's work today for teachers that are preparing to go into talented and gifted, that used Italians as the example of why you don't want, it was eugenic thought, why you don't want to waste education on Italians. That it would be so much kinder and nicer to funnel Italians into, and I don't have the quote right now, but it's on, I don't know if it's an archive, it might have been when I was doing the radio program, but if any of you want it, email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, and I'll find it for you. But I read it specifically because I felt, okay, I can read this because I'm Italian. But basically it said, why almost like benevolently harming, trying not to harm the Italian children because they were better suited for labor. Now, they must have forgotten all about Galileo and all the, you know, just the Renaissance period, Michael. They forgot about everybody. But to them, the people that came here from Italy were the laborers. Well, of course, they were the laborers because they were starving. And because when they got here, that's all they could do. Couldn't even speak the language. Every single one of you have something, maybe, like that. Maybe you don't. I've known people that hailed here since the 1600s. I've met them down in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, an older woman who's probably long deceased. She was 30 years ago. But her family hailed back from the House of Burgess, 1600s. So there's a big, we are a big mix. And somehow we're either told that we forgot it and we didn't, or there's some kind of a cultural ether that we all think that we are just really, you know, the master race and everybody else sucks. And I don't feel that way because I know where I came from, and where I came from, I don't know a lot of it because we had to scatter. So those wonderful, beautiful, tight Italian families, I didn't get that because we had to scatter. And the Polish part and the other part and this part and the that part, we had to scatter, and we had famine and starvation you know, trying to do whatever you could, dangerous or not, to survive. That was my heritage. And that's what it was about. That's why my parents seemed to have spontaneous generation with items of clothing from 1945 that are still being unearthed today, even though I've taken probably 5 moving trucks away from over the years. When now my father's left and he's in a little tiny, beautiful place. But how does he get that how does he get t-shirts you can still see through from 1940? Where are the ones that we keep buying him? Well, that he's comfortable with those. But in those days, with the depression, with starving, with watching his brother die of scarlet fever after he had scarlet fever, seeing that every single, being 10 years old and having to come from school to a candy shop where he had to take cast iron boiling hot candy and put them in a freezer because that's how marshmallows were made then, because his father only could do candy, made candy. And so you know, dangerous, dangerous situations where he's, you know, thrown off of the back of a car and run over, and he really doesn't have an ability to have medical care. So, you know, it's like these are real stories of my family. So open up and realize you all came from the same thing. And people here that are trying to get in a van and get here to work or to become, have a new life or to get educated or to send money back to the most rural areas where there were, they do still so many folk things that are, I can get into some of these. I don't want to go into the whole thing because I want to get to Mary. But I was talking with a woman who is talked about some of the who actually is. She's a relative. She's my in-law's cousin and my daughter-in-law's cousin. But she's a very educated woman. They've gone all over the world. She's studying all over the world now. But she did some work for women in a rural Mexico. And some of the barbaric things that they did in that little town, first of all, completely impoverished and starving and wonderful people, but they also did things to assure the safety of one of the members of the family. If the man had to go find itinerant work somewhere, they would do pretty barbaric practices to make sure that nobody... that they would stay put or that no man would take advantage of them. I mean, it's just something that people do the best they can, but they want to break out of that. They need something different. They need something better. I know so many people here that go back to see, you know, they're from a family of 13, 14. So we need to open up our hearts. And the UCCB, USCCB, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, asked that today's feast be offered for migrants and refugees. So I'm going to give you refugee stories, but I want to give you my personal story with Our Lady Guadalupe, and I want to give you some prayers, but I also want to give you some ways that I've prayed, and I tell you, she never fails me, ever. Now, she may not be the form of herself that chased you down the beach. Maybe it's Our Lady of Fatima. Maybe it's Our Lady Undoer of Knots. Maybe it could be anyone. But it's the same Mary. It's the same Mary. It's like Pixar has a lot of different pictures. There's a lot of different pictures. It's still the same company. So she just reaches different people at different times. So she's there for the needs of the generation because her job is to bring forth life. Her job is to bring forth the Savior, which she said, okay, handmaid of the Lord, I will do it. Yes, I will. Started her journey of unknown steps. And yet she doesn't tire. She doesn't stop. She has her job to do. If we can pray to Saint Joseph or other of our processions of saints to enlist there, ask them to pray for us, so much more the Mother of God. She's an awesome character, and she is a character because she'll go to little children and big children and adults and this impoverished place, this not so impoverished place, because she's giving, she knows. So she's giving a word for the day, whatever day that is. I'm Dr. Michelle. We'll see you on the other side of the break, and we'll finish up our stories, and then we'll get to some of these wonderful prayers as well. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. Here with me today, Dr. Michelle on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. If you have a Lady of Guadalupe story or a refugee story or a migrant story, please, you can call 573-4BREAD-4. You can text. You can choose to be anonymous. We'll just refer to you as anonymous. And also you can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, because it does not have to do necessarily with it has to be done today, because this is ongoing. Our Lady Guadalupe is an ongoing beauty. So let me roll back a little bit and go to my story. And then I want to give you a couple stories of personal friends of mine who have had what their situations are. But I wanted to start by opening you up to looking. We tend to sometimes forget our own heritage. And in my divorce, it's like it was hard for me, but it's not uncommon. It's not uncommon. I mean, everyone just talk to us if you're divorced or you talk to someone. It's more common than not to forget the past, to forget that when you see that it's almost like someone's approaching you as if you're that you didn't have that connection with them for all those years. And it's one of the biggest pains about divorce. And women tend to see the tragedy in it more, I suppose. That's my understanding. It's even kind of conventional wisdom that women do see it more sadly, I suppose. But I know many, 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 many men who are pained and sad and sorrowful for what has happened. And as if all that history together is gone. It just poof, it vanished. And you're here without a frame of reference. And you're just standing on the ground you're standing on as if you never made it with the other person. You never had a life together. So this is what happens with people when we talk about immigration or migration or refugees. Now, let me clarify something. I believe and I feel that the presupposition, and this I don't like, we all, through the church, through politics, through everything, we are spoken to as if it's already presupposed that we are bigoted. And that's why I told you a little bit about my family. And that I don't like. As if we've already declared, we've written down our little declaration. This is how I feel, you know, that, and it's already assumed or presupposed. It's almost like, you know, there's a joke, and I hope I get it right, but it's not really a joke because it was a technique, in trying to get someone who, let's say, kills their uncle, and they're denying it. And then on these, you hear the cop saying to the suspect, "So what knife did you use to kill your uncle?" And so that way it's already assumed, presupposed that it's a done deal that he did or she did. And that the knife is something that's kind of the hook there. So they don't deny it anymore. They kind of keep adding on these things. And I think a lot of our language and a lot of our rhetoric and a lot of our communication is almost like that. Like we've already been signed, sealed, delivered, and repainted. But I remember my history, and I know a lot of people out there who do, and a lot of the elders who are condemned to be these bigoted people. Some of them are. Yes, they are. But I talk to more elders than not that remember being in that 10-room home, remember being spit on because they were the new group when they were babies and they have stories from their parents. They might be in their 90s now. I remember that. And there's a prejudice was all over the place. It's still all over the place. We're called not to be that way, but you won't be that way so much if you get your history, you get your own personal history. and you understand that the people who came to Ellis Island or came across different borders, either from Mexico or down through Alaska, Canada, wherever they got here, boats on the East Coast, boats on the West Coast, boats coming up from wherever, that they were running from something with nothing, with certain death, disease, destruction, loss of children, crammed conditions, no money, no hope, pestilence, mockery, marginalization, ghettos. It's happened to many different groups. Even the groups now that might seem like the oppressor groups, it happened to their groups too, some of them. I don't know so much about the British, but I do know the other ones. Absolutely, it's very easy to find. It's just common knowledge. So I want to give you a story. Well, I told you I'd tell you my story of Guadalupe. So I'm going to, the last segment is when I'm going to do the story of this amazing woman. And I also want to give you some prayers. But my story was this. So I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and it is just really so beautiful. And I've got my job, and the driving in the morning time was like a constant glory to God, even though at that moment I still was kind of like not really a believer. But I was like, it was just like, oh my gosh, these are angels out here. The angels are like landing in the sky. It was so beautiful. And, you know, promptly my bike got stolen and other things get stolen. And I went down to use the general computer in the apartment house, and there was all kinds of scams going on. And it was just it was like a really predator world down there in some respects. Lots of wonderful people too. But I was driving down one day from taking my husband to the airport, and I happened to see this little gold dome and these palm trees, and I was waiting for a cruise ship to go through the drawbridge, and we all backed up in traffic, and it caught my eye, and I thought, I'm going to go check that out. What is that dome? And I thought it might be like a museum or something, and so I wound around, and it's another story, but that was, saw this little tiny sign, hand-painted Catholic Church with an arrow. And I thought, well, maybe it's old and it's like museum type stuff. And I went, followed it all around and get there and go to the main church, and it's all locked up. And a gardener comes out from nowhere and says, well, the main church is locked for the season. You can go to the chapel. And I asked him where it was. Thank you very much. And that was that. And I decided to go back thinking it might be historical. Well, it wasn't, but it's where Our Lady came and just, I mean, she might as well have just locked me in a room and shown me everything I needed or not needed to see, because it was very, I cried for months, and all I could think of was Mary. Mary was the first one that really came to me in that room, where she was there, and I wasn't even big on Mary. I kind of just knew she was the Mother of God. I was raised Catholic, but I didn't remember how to say a rosary, and I'd been away for 30 years. And so she did. She started it. She started the whole thing. And it was not until probably a year later that I would even utter the words, and I believe in Jesus Christ, because I decided I was just going to let what was happening happen. And I was not going to say something I didn't completely believe in. I just decided to be authentic as the day is long, because it was shock and awe. That's another story, my conversion story, because pretty freaky. So one day after a lot of this was happening, I hadn't even met the priest that was at the parish. And one day I walk out and there's this little Irish priest, and we almost knock him over with the door. And it was a chapel of adoration, and I didn't know it because it was manned by the elders that lived in the neighborhood on off season, and many of them were always sick, so or going to a doctor, so they would just watch the chapel from across the courtyard. And he named it the Chapel of Divine Healing, Father Pat. So one day, after talking to him here and there, I'm driving down the beach, and I see all these people doing yoga. And I thought, why can't people, I started saying the rosary again. I said, why can't I organize a rosary for on the beach? If they can organize yoga, they can certainly organize a rosary. So, or I can, why not? So I go and I'm thinking about it, how I'm going to do it. And one day I run into Father Pat again and I tell him my idea. And he goes, well, I have an idea. He said, why don't we do it in a few weeks on December 12th, the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. I didn't even know who she was. I did not know who she was. I'd been away that long. And so he really wanted to do it. And I was a little hesitant, but I said, well, sure. I'll tell you the rest of the story on the other side of the break. But that was my first introduction to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And so much came out of that that I will share with you. And then we'll get into the migrant stories, but then we'll also get into some little prayers that I've learned along the way to enlist Our Lady of Guadalupe and how they've worked for me. And I know that they will work for you too, or your own particular brand of prayer. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Our road of life, our beautiful Lady of Guadalupe. So I'll finish up this story. So Father Pat, who was an Irish priest, I think he might have been in his late 60s, early 70s by then. He was a diabetic, but he was always so happy. He was so happy all the time. All the time. And as I got to know him, he was, he was in a wheelchair by then. I think he had because of diabetes, a leg amputated. And then he had to have his other leg amputated. And then, I think he had to have a handout. I mean, it was just one thing after another, but he was always happy. And he'd have this little Tigger, like from Winnie the Pooh in the back of his wheelchair as he'd go down the aisle. He was just such an amazing. He was a Monsignor and the most humble man, funny, right from Ireland. And he sent me something from Our Lady of Knock, actually, as well, when he was there. So anyway, so he says, well, how about that? And he said, I'll do a mass and then we can have the rosary and have like a potluck or something. And I thought, well, okay. I mean, I didn't know that was that big a deal. And so I start looking up pictures, and I found this beautiful picture of Our Lady Guadalupe, bright colors, just gorgeous, and made up a bunch of posters. And I asked, I told him, I said, I think we should just do it all over for all the parishes. And he said, well, you know, you can try that, but I'm telling you, it's very political and in its own right, and they're very protective. And so they don't want people going to other parishes. And I said, well, that's kind of not good for being Catholic. And he said, well, that's just kind of how it is. They don't want you defecting to another parish. But I did it anyway. He goes, you might get 8 or 10 people, because it was off season, meaning it was I guess I might have just started being in season in December in Fort Lauderdale. So I put flyers around, I called all these different parishes, and he was right. They weren't that interested. They didn't want me to put the flyers in the church because we'll do our own thing. And, but that's okay. And so, but we ended up with 40 people, and Father Pat, we had this, the big poster with the beautiful picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and Father Pat did the mass. He gave some stories about falling asleep when he was a child in Ireland on his grandmother, that they would all get together, the whole family, they would get together and say the rosary, and he would fall asleep on her back to the vibration of her saying the rosary. Or that his dad, if he and his little brothers would be upstairs and looking and laughing through the railings, his father would say the rosary, walk up the stairs, still saying the rosary, whack them and spank them to get them to stop laughing and then never miss a beat and go back down. Now today he'd probably be arrested, but that was way back in Ireland many, many years ago, of course. So anyway, so we have this thing, I met a man there that said that he had not said a rosary in over 40 years, and it rekindled his love of Mary. And that's another story, because we ended up writing, actually his cat wrote to my cat, for almost, 15 years or so. It just all these things opened up, and it was beautiful and it was fun. So now fast forward, and Our Lady of Guadalupe, as I'm still, every time I see a picture of her, I'm just warmed, because it was such a beautiful, fun experience. And I thought she was a really important person. And when I was at a prayer group, we would have the statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And then I got into Our Lady of Carmel and all these different things because of a grandfather that I had that supposedly was rescued from the Mediterranean Sea, our great-grandfather, when he was praying to Our Lady of Carmel in a storm, and he got thrown overboard. And oddly enough, the gentleman I just told you about, who was himself rather poor in Fort Lauderdale, he had been swept out off of the tip of Argentina, I think, into freezing water. He was a merchant marine, and it was at night, and there was a storm, and he prayed to Our Lady then. And that was like in the 50s or something. So interesting stories with there. But now we fast forward, and I had a dire need to help my son in a way that I had no concept how I could help him. Everything I did was wrong, and everything I would advise other people to do, I didn't do. I broke all the rules. And he was with a girlfriend that was obviously very, very damaging relationship. And I wanted to pray it away. And a dear friend of mine, Kathy, we were walking one day saying the rosary, and she came across the Infant of Prague novena. So it's a speed novena. I've told you about it before. It's a speed novena. You could say it all in one day, every hour, or I just started saying it before dinner every day, and it takes about 3 minutes. And you enlist whoever you want, you know, obviously it's always through the powerful intervention of our Blessed Virgin Mary. And I would add, and Our Lady of Guadalupe, and then whatever other saints you want. And there's three parts to it. And so I did that for almost 4 years. And I would always say, through the powerful intervention of Our Lady of Guadalupe, that was always there. And when I stopped from please get rid of the relationship to please help me love the relationship, or not love it, but accept it, to God put someone in his path that will lead him eventually to you. Then, and I also asked Mary to be the matchmaker, boom, he by chance meets my daughter-in-law from Mexico City, who had, even though she says she doesn't have a belief in God, has hundreds of thousands of rosaries throughout all her lifetime living in Mexico. And there she is, boom. And now she's my daughter-in-law. So that was my miracle. And the other relationship had dwindled. Or no, not dwindled, it's shock and awe left. But it was it was a trip. And so every time I prayed to her, I want to get to, I've only got a few more minutes, two things. One of my prayers, now if you go on to UC, to the United Conference of Bishops, there's also a beautiful thing I can, about the scriptural rosary too, that I can get for you. Maybe I'll give you a link where it does says this beautiful mysteries that do have the migrants and the refugees. But I want to tell you my refugee story too. So my refugee story is this. I'm in a residency and in psychiatry, and part of the rotation is to go to internal medicine. And I meet this woman who's Muslim. I didn't know she was Muslim, from Bosnia. And she was a doctor in Bosnia. She was an infectious disease doctor in Bosnia. Her husband was a cardiologist in Bosnia. She lived on their family lived in the same street for over 700 years, the same area, because they were Bosnian and they'd been there from ancient times. And when the Serbs, who were Christian, the Serbs were, and when the war was breaking out, no matter how you feel about, I didn't even know about it, to be honest with you, that much about it. But she had seen, she knew she had to leave because she saw her neighbor being killed, throat slit. Her husband chose not to go. He said, everyone, I'll be fine. But she said, I'm leaving with the kids. I'm leaving. And she and her friend stole an ambulance and had a little 2-year-old and a little 4-year-old. And they stole an ambulance and they somehow passed the first guard. And they then somehow they got out of the ambulance, and this one little girl who now is an amazing, what a contributor to our society she is, but she played the accordion and she took that from home. And she gave me the story of her and her friend and her two little girls going 2 miles bent over in a 90 degree angle in a tunnel on foot with her little girl dragging her accordion behind her to get out of war-torn Bosnia and to save her daughter's lives. She is the most amazing woman. She didn't know where to go. They ended up in Istanbul, she and her sisters and her mom and dad. They ended up in Istanbul. One of them went to Canada. One of them went here. They had to go 5 years in Istanbul waiting to get to the United States. And when she got here, she wasn't a doctor here. She had to go through everything and she could not even speak English. She taught herself. She went to Catholic Charities, but she would not take welfare. And she went and she taught herself English. She taught herself English through medical books because she thought, well, medical's pretty universal. So, because it came from the Latin, or at least it did at that point. So that's how she taught herself English. And now she and her sister are doctors in California. She's got grandkids. Her one daughter, one's a lawyer and one's working for our government in a very high position. Please. Our Lady is amazing, and she doesn't care who you are. She doesn't care what faith-based you come from. She will come for you. And right now, we're being asked to pray to Our Lady for all refugees, for all migrants. And remember, some of the people that are here illegally are being forced to do things they shouldn't do, that will scar them for life. We need them liberated and loved. And Our Lady of Guadalupe is the one to do it. So today, offer up that prayer. I'm going to give you these two links because we couldn't get to the rosary. And I'll have to give you my prayers, my personal prayers, at another time. I am Dr. Michelle. God bless you. Happy, happy, happy Feast of Our Lady.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.